All right, thanks everyone for coming to the session on remuneration models. Let's talk about agent remuneration for outsourced claims and policy administration services. This talk is given by Peter Hardy and Grace Ng. And Grace is a manager of PricewaterhouseCoopers and Actuarial Services in Sydney. She's a qualified actuary with over 8 years of experience in the financial services industry. She is advised on issues relating to pricing, reserving, portfolio monitoring and capital management. Peter is a director in PricewaterhouseCoopers in Actuarial Services in Sydney as well. He's a qualified actuary with over 15 years of experience in the financial services industry. He has advised on issues relating to pricing, reserving, activity-based expense analysis, portfolio management and capital management. So at this point, I might pass it over to Grace.
Thanks, Vivian. Hello, everyone, and welcome to our presentation today. Let's talk about agent remuneration. As our topic suggests, we're here today to present and have a bit of a conversation around agent remuneration, and more specifically, how do we use agent remuneration to achieve a balanced outcome between the scheme and the agents. As we're considering this from a perspective of accident compensation schemes, our focus today is really on the outsourcing of claims and policy administration functions. One of the motivations for us in writing this paper is the fact that there is a gap in existing literature in terms of research done in this area. We see this as a bit of an opportunity for us to reflect and explore ways which we could better align the interests between the scheme, the agents and the injured claimants. In a way, this paper is also a journey from a previous paper which Peter and some of our other colleagues has written on the role of incentive measures within workers' compensation scheme. Just to set a scene, here's a quick roadmap in terms of the items that we'll cover today. We'll kick off with a background to our paper, followed by a discussion around the creation of enduring partnership between the scheme and the agents. We'll then move on to a discussion around the principles of effective remuneration design. We'll conclude our presentation today with some of our final thoughts, leaving some time at the end for discussions around the room. Now, in researching for our paper, we have really struggled to look for publicly available information. This is not a surprise to us as remuneration arrangements by their nature are confidential agreements. What has been really helpful for us in obtaining some evidence-based insights was the remuneration survey which we have developed and sent out to various schemes and agents across Australia. In total, we have received 3 responses from the schemes and 9 responses from the agents. And we would like to acknowledge here the contribution that these responses have made to our paper. The feedback which we've received has been extremely helpful in giving us some practical insights and has been fundamental to the forming of our conclusions. There are many accident compensation schemes which operate across Australia. What we've included here in this table are the main accident compensation schemes with existing outsourcing arrangements. Each of these schemes has its own operating model, with some opting for a single agent model such as the South Australia Motor Accident Commission and others opting for a multi-agent model. And within a multi-agent model, the number of agents employed varies across the schemes. In addition to this, the scheme may also choose to outsource only its claims function or both its claims and policy administration function. It is important to recognize that each of these schemes is unique, with its own set of objectives and operating model. Therefore, it is crucial for the remuneration arrangement to be tailored to the specifics of each scheme. We see the relationship between the scheme and the agents as a partnership. And as with any partnerships, one of the keys to success is the achievement of a balanced outcome between the two parties. And in the context of accident compensation schemes, we think this is especially important because over and above the creation of a win-win situation between the scheme and the agents, a successful partnership ensures that the best outcomes are delivered to the injured claimants. Now, what is a balanced outcome? One way to think of this is to think in terms of the value of an outsourcing arrangement. A balanced outcome arises when the arrangement is both good value to the scheme and good value to the agents, as we have represented here with the balance scale which we have included in this slide. Having said all this, how do we decide what is good value? In the next two slides, we'll go over a simple framework which we have put together to assess the value of an outsourcing arrangement to both the schemes and the agents. Let's start with what's good value to the scheme. Ultimately, when a scheme outsources its policy or claims function, it should still be able to achieve its objectives. Scheme objectives are generally legislated and can include effective rehabilitation of injured claimants, early return to work, and the viability of the scheme. Potentially, there are also other benefits or value adds which the scheme can derive from the arrangements. Some examples are cost savings due to administration efficiencies and more effective claims management. On the flip side, there are also potential value detractors which can make the scheme worse off than if they were to manage the function internally. One example is increase in expenses due to agents acting in their own interests, such as to maximize their profits rather than in the interests of the scheme and the injured claimants, which may in turn lead to reputation damage for the scheme. And in addition to this, the scheme may also experience high administration costs due to increased time spent in the management of agents. All of these factors should be considered in the assessment of the value of the outsourcing arrangement. Essentially, good value is achieved when the scheme achieves its objectives and the potential value adds are greater than the potential value detractors. It is also worthwhile to note and to allow for the fact that value detractors are risks that the scheme can manage and control through appropriate mitigation controls. Some examples of potential mitigators are the imposition of quality gates to ensure a minimum level of performance and the inclusion of performance-based fees, both of which Peter will cover in further detail later in our presentation today. In the event that mitigation controls don't work, the scheme may also directly intervene to address areas where the agents may be performing poorly. This slide applies the same framework to the agents. As commercial operations, agents will require an adequate level of remuneration to cover their expenses and to provide for a fair level of profit margin in exchange for the services that they provide. As with scheme objectives, an adequate level of remuneration is the core requirement of a good value arrangement to the agents. Similarly, considerations should be given to the potential value adds. For example, for insurer agent, the arrangement may provide cross-selling opportunities for their other insurance products. And on the other hand, potential value detractors should also be allowed for. Some examples are reputation damage and loss of market share due to poor performance, as well as increase in expenses due to underestimation of the scope of services. I'll now pass on to Peter, who will touch on the use of remuneration model to achieve a balanced outcome between the scheme and the agents.
Thanks, Grace. I think one thing that's clear from Grace's discussion is that the scheme and the agent can sometimes have competing priorities in these sorts of arrangements. And really, to provide good value, you need to align those interests to the scheme objectives. Now, as a matter of course, that's not going to happen. And there's a number of ways schemes can actually align those interests. If you think about it, one way that they can align interests is to basically just let competitive tender forces act. So it is award, I suppose, the tender to the agent, which is likely to be aligned best with the scheme outcomes, or that in the past has delivered outcomes which are consistent with the scheme. Another way they can do it is through reputation, and this is really applicable in a multi-agent model. In a multi-agent model, they could publish statistics about the ranking of various agents, and so therefore there's an incentive for the agents to align their performance with scheme objectives. And lastly, there's a remuneration model, and that's what we're talking about over the next few slides. Now, I think every presentation probably needs a buzzword or an acronym, so we've come up with the EFFECT model here. Essentially, the effect principles is important in remuneration design, and I suppose there's a number of aspects to that. Fundamentally, the agreement needs to align the interests of the scheme and the agent. We'll talk a bit more about that later. And it also must be fair, so give a fair result for both the agent and the scheme. And so they're the fundamental principles. However, to continue to be relevant and functional over time, they also need to be flexible in changing circumstances, easy to understand and simple, be clear, and also there's a number of time frame related issues that need to be considered as well. So if we think about remuneration, there's probably two main types of models out there. The first is a fixed fee type arrangement. Now, under a fixed fee type arrangement, agents are paid a fixed amount. To align interests under these types of models can be quite difficult, but they're typically aligned through things such as process measures. And process measures are things like quality gates or minimum service requirements. And so, for example, claims maybe need to be processed within 3 days and so forth. These of themselves are not necessarily good incentivisers of agent performance, and so you actually need to consider other types of arrangements as well. And so performance-based fees are fees where agents are paid a variable amount depending on their performance. And the interests are aligned in these circumstances through the implementation of outcome measures, and those outcome measures should be linked to the achievement of scheme objectives. And again, for example, there you might get higher payments. Agents might receive higher payments for better return to work outcomes, for example. Our remuneration survey suggested that the general acceptance that a mixture of fixed and performance fees work best, and that the performance-based fees is important in aligning the interests of the agents with the schemes. So this obviously begs the question, what's the ideal proportion of performance-based fees that should be in these remuneration arrangements? And again, I think this comes back to what the scheme objectives are. For example, what level of innovation does the scheme want to incentivise? Additionally, high proportion of performance-based fees could be incentives for agents to invest additionally into their businesses. For example, the development of other infrastructure and or innovation. Having said that, the scheme needs to be clear that the performance-related objectives are clearly defined, that the outcomes that they're going to achieve are durable and robust, and the scheme also needs to understand that the level of remuneration that's on offer is commensurate with the benefits that's received from the alignment with those scheme objectives. Many respondents to our survey suggested that about 10 to 20% of total remuneration should be related to performance-based fees. But that was not universal, and in fact some of the agents suggested that 50% or even open-ended arrangements would be required to promote real innovation, and we've got the quote up there. So one of the things that came out of our survey was that respondents were quite passionate about the form of the performance-based fees, what the form of that was, and we wanted to go through three examples here. The first one is about malice aspects of remuneration arrangements, and there were very different views on this. Some thought that malice type arrangements should only be related to process measures such as hygiene related objectives, whereas others saw that there was actually some use in longer term measures and clawback of performance where those performances were not durable in the longer term. Secondly, if I can read out the second quote there, the payout rates of incentive fees currently do not promote investment in innovation in any scheme in Australia, I suppose is food for thought for some schemes. I suppose there's a number of ways that you can actually incentivise innovation, and remuneration is obviously one of those, but thought could also be given to setting up a separate innovation pool where agents could actually bid upon innovative techniques and then be paid certain amounts but depending on the attainment of scheme objectives along the way or milestones in that project. The third point is quite interesting around relative or absolute measures. So by this, an absolute measure may be the attainment of, say, a 60% loss ratio, whereas a relative measure is, in a multi-agent model might be beating the scheme average. And look, there's a number of different circumstances where each of those are appropriate. And the balance between those can be quite difficult in a multi-agent model, especially if the performance of some agents are very different to the performance of other agents. What you don't want to do is disincentivise agents from the beginning if they've been poorly defined. One thing that came through clear was that relative measures have are basically good for when you have a changing environment, such as legislative change, where you may not actually understand what the performance of the absolute performance of agents might be. So key to, performance-based measures is the development of appropriate key performance indicators. And that's crucial in aligning the agent outcomes with the scheme objectives. And careful thought really needs to go into the development of those. Firstly, you need to identify the behaviours and outcomes that you really want to change or influence. Secondly, you need to perform a cost-benefit analysis of the introduction of some of those key performance indicators. And lastly, you want to test the KPI prior to implementation to see if there's any adverse behavioural impacts that might result from the introduction of those KPIs. One of the things we asked in our survey was for respondents to rate the characteristics of performance-based key performance measures. One thing that was in general agreement between the scheme and the agent was that KPIs should be related to scheme financial objectives, that payments of remuneration should be timely, and the importance of absolute performance. So there's probably no surprises from that. Things that were deemed more important to the scheme but less so to the agent was the importance of relative performance, the periodic monitoring of performance over time, and also the assessment of performance over more than a year. The last two were probably a little bit surprising from our perspective. Things that were more important to the agent but less so to the scheme included things such as simplicity, so I think that KPIs were simple and easy to understand, that the KPIs were able to be objectively assessed, and lastly, the adjustment to KPI targets for factors outside agent control. And this leads on, I think, quite nicely into the fairness sort of concept, so the agents required a fair assessment of their performance. But to summarise, hopefully this discussion has highlighted the importance of aligning the agent outcomes to scheme objectives and that there's quite a few challenges to do that effectively. We'll now move on to the F in the effect model, the first F. And so that's basically the fundamental principle of fairness. Now, if we think about this from first principles, there's a tension here between the scheme and the agent. Remuneration is obviously expense to the scheme, but it's revenue to an agent, and you need to achieve a balance between those two. One thing that we think is really important is that you get what you pay for, that sort of principle. If agents don't feel that they're being compensated adequately for their services, then they may not invest and may lack investment in their operations, and that in turn may lead to poor sustained performance within the schemes. But at the end of the day, fair is quite a subjective concept. And really, to us, fairness, you know, the level of remuneration should not be excessive for the scheme, but it should also provide a sufficient level of profit margin for the agents. After all, they are running a commercial operation. We asked survey respondents about what they thought an adequate rate of return over their expenses was, and the remuneration survey, the scheme suggested about 15% of expenses. And not surprisingly, the agents expected a higher number, and they averaged around 25% of expenses. So once you've formed a view on what sort of profitability should be available to agents, you then need to form a view on the agent expenses themselves, and that's the cost of production. How much does it cost to provide the services? Now, we believe that's important whether you actually set a contract price, which you then give to the agents, or whether you let market forces decide in a competitive tender situation. And forming a view on expenses can actually be quite a complex exercise with many challenges. First and foremost, agents will typically have very different operating models. If we think about the participants, you firstly have insurers, and you also have special service providers as well, and they're going to have very different levels of IT systems and other infrastructure, and they'll also have very different claim management processes, how they subdivide their claim management activities and how they run their businesses. Secondly, when assessing expenses, decisions need to be made around how you allow for things such as overheads, infrastructure and fixed costs, and certainly to some extent what sort of amortisation period you might use across those. So what's a normal sort of level of investment that you'd expect from claim managers over time in those types of infrastructure? And secondly, to what extent is there actually scalability in the operations of different agents, and should agents be paid the same amount in a multi-agent model? From our survey, there was very mixed views on some of these issues, and we've got a couple of quotes up there. So one agent suggested that all scheme agents' operating cost models are very different and expenses should not be used as the basis of remuneration available. And another extreme view, or we thought was extreme view, was an extremely strong view that all agents should be paid the same rate. The businesses are not scalable with the exception of IT. So I suppose our important takeouts from that was probably two things. The first one being that you need to form a view on what an adequate level of profit for these operations and remuneration arrangements are, and secondly, that you need some sort of framework to understand agent expenses. And so in summary, the principle of fairness is important but can be challenging to manage.
So Peter has covered the fundamental aspects of an effective remuneration model, which are represented by the big A and the big F of our effect principle. I'll now go over the second component of effect, which are the little F, E, C, and T. These are the supporting elements to ensure that the arrangement continues to be relevant and functional. Let's start with F for flexibility. Accident compensation schemes operate in a constantly changing environment. Some examples of recent changes which are outside the control of agents are the 2009 global financial crisis and the 2012 New South Wales workers' compensation benefit reform. Flexibility is important to ensure that adjustments can be made to ensure that the arrangements continue to be relevant in the event of these changes, and also to prevent the over-penalisation or over-compensation of agents for items that are outside of their control. There's a general consensus among our survey respondents that flexibility is highly important. For example, one of the agent respondents commented that we should recognise adjustments need to be negotiated during contracts to facilitate scheme priorities and legislative changes. Having said this, it is also important to note that there is a trade-off between a remuneration contract being fixed, hence giving the agents the ability to plan for future resources and for it to be flexible enough to cater for changing circumstances. The other two aspects which shouldn't be overlooked are simplicity and clarity. Easy to understand and simple contract provides focus on the key priorities of the scheme. It is also easier to administer, thus reducing management time and costs. This would, however, need to be balanced against the complexity of accident compensation schemes. For example, a model with three main KPIs may not capture all of the key risks of an accident compensation scheme. Hence, it may be insufficient to deliver the desired scheme objectives. On the flip side, a model with 20 KPIs may be simply too impractical to implement. The key here, again, is balance. Meanwhile, clarity of contract wordings is highly important to ensure that both the scheme and the agents are clear on how the remuneration arrangement works. Clear, consistent definitions and timing specification will minimise the possibility of misinterpretation and thus the potential for disputes. As an example, if a return to work measure is to be developed, some specifications required for clarity may include: are certain claims excluded from the definition of return to work? What constitutes return to work? Is it total return to work? Or is it partial return to work in the same function as before? Or is it partial return to work in any function? In terms of time frame, there are several aspects which should be considered. First of all, contracts should reflect the long-term nature of claims and ideally should span over a few years. This is as, first, due to the long-term nature of claims, investments in processes and technologies may take some time before they translate into improved claim outcomes. And secondly, agents may need some time at the start of the contract to set up processes and reporting requirements, and some time at the end of the contract to maximize returns and prepare for renewal submissions. This is supported by our survey findings, which indicate that an average term of 5 years is an appropriate duration of a remuneration arrangement. Another theme which came through really strongly in our survey responses is around the re-engagement risk. By that, we refer to the lack of certainty of renewal for agents upon expiry of their current remuneration arrangement. This lack of renewal certainty may encourage agents to make short-term decisions which may be suboptimal to the scheme and the injured claimants in the long run. One possible way to reduce this risk, which we have mentioned in our paper, is to offer conditional renewability based on the agent's performance. All of the issues above are highlighted by a comment which we have received as part of our survey. It says, given the nature of a workers' compensation scheme, the investment often takes time to realise. Hence, a sufficient period to embed within process and realise benefits. There is also a significant investment in the contract renewal process, which has the potential to detract agents from focusing on cost. In addition to this, timely remuneration is also important to allow agents to meet their running costs and to plan for future resources. And finally, monitoring is not only important to provide the necessary feedback to the agents, but also for the scheme to identify any shortcomings in the current arrangements, whether through flaw in design or changes in the environment.
Okay, so the theme of the seminar this year is about balancing outcomes. Now, when a scheme chooses to outsource their claims and policy administration functions, a number of decisions needs to be made about balancing what will provide good value to the scheme and what will provide good value to the agent. And today, through the effect principles, we've seen that a remuneration arrangement needs to balance the alignment of agent and scheme objectives with fair remuneration while still retaining relevance and functionality over time. We believe that an enduring scheme and agent relationship will be one that is best able to balance these often competing priorities. Now, part of what we want to do this paper was to just have some general discussion and to provide different, I suppose, stakeholders' thoughts on something which I suppose there are a lot of confidential agreements and so forth. So hopefully we can open up the floor now and here's a couple of discussion points where we'd be interested in getting other people's points of views. Peter.
Thanks, Peter and Grace. I actually have lots of comments, but I'll restrict myself to a few.
2 minutes, Peter.
So, firstly, I think there's one important criteria you've actually left off, and don't confuse it with one you have up there. You need to be able, claims people need to be able to operationalise what the performance KPIs are. And I think that's something that's missing. And that doesn't mean it's simple and understandable. It means you can operationalise it. So you can actually have looks like simple and you can understand it, but you cannot operationalise the KPI. And I can give you examples of what I'm talking about. Second thing, and I sort of get where the agents come from on this. I think most people would like to have objective KPIs. The problem, I see that there's actually a fundamental problem with that, because you're dealing with a business that is it requires a lot of judgment in how claims are managed. And I think if you restrict yourself just to objective measures, then you're actually not going to deal with a whole lot of issues around the quality of claims management. I understand why people want objective measures, and it makes sense, but I think reality is when you're dealing with this sort of business, it's really hard just to combine yourself to those. Third comment. I was quite interested in the 15 and 25% profit targets on expenses. My understanding, I can't remember where this comes from, is that I thought with outsourcing arrangements, the average profit objective of organisations, I'm not just talking about insurance and claims management, is about an average of 25% over time. So the 15% seemed really low, but I look at the 25% as an average over time. So some years you will get less, other years when you perform well, you would actually end up with more.
You were going to give some examples there. I don't really know what to respond to. I mean, thank you for your comments. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I mean, certainly, I mean, one of the things we did look at was, you know, what are typical profit margins out there in business, but I suppose it is difficult to sort of benchmark against other types of things as well. In our paper, we sort of talked about, you know, what a return on expenses might look like for a GI company. Again, they're very difficult to compare because they've got very different risks and you can't really do it. Again, it's very different to some of the other industries that are out there and so forth, but certainly, you know, 15 to 25% was not out of the ballpark from the discussions we had around the office as well.
I've actually seen the same situation where probably
Yeah, and they're averages that we had on the board there too, Peter, so there was a reasonable range around that too.
Sure. And if you could state your name and where you're from.
I was very interested, and I thought this is going to be really interesting because of the idea of the enduring partnership, which is in fact the view that I hold strongly about these arrangements. And I just make the observation that in the context of these agreements, which I've been involved in quite a number now, the command and control method is as destructive as the wrong KPIs. But there needs to be, I think, a lot of thought being given to what I call relational contracts. And there's actually a lot of academic discussion about relational contracts in different contexts. And I think that relational idea is that of working together between the scheme operator and the agent is extremely important. And the contractual frameworks quite often end up not providing arrangements between the parties where that working together relationship is actually recognised. Now, I understand the point about KPIs and things like that, but I think there's a whole other dimension to this, to these sort of arrangements.
One thing we do go into a little bit in the paper, we didn't present it here, was around actually to what level do you actually get the agents involved in terms of developing KPIs and developing that working relationship and so forth. And yeah, that's very important. I think for these things to work, you need a functional working relationship between the agents and the scheme as well.
Yeah, there's got to be a buy-in to the objectives is yes. What I'm really saying.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. It's been strong. That's right, yeah. And in fact, I'd agree with that.
Richard Bell from CGU, and these are the views of the individual, not the company. I think the issue about profit margin is quite complex because, for one thing, there's very low capital base on these agencies. So you often think of capital return in an insurance sense just doesn't apply here. I think one of the things that's, in my experience, really important is that there are opportunities in the remuneration program to get a return on investment, particularly over the longer period. So whether it's 15%, whether it's 25%, I think the more important thing is that if you want to invest and create more and better performance, that you're going to get some value out of that investment. And I guess just the last thing I'd say is that without doubt, there are very different approaches taken by agents. And one of the things about having agents in your scheme rather than monopoly is that you get a variety of different approaches to investment, different approaches to all the things that you talked about, in fact Peter talked about in his prior one. So having that flexibility in the remuneration to get return, I think is probably the most important thing.
Nick Allsop, Allianz Australia. Similar to the earlier comments, I fundamentally agree that without that collaboration and that trust and mutual respect between not only the scheme and the agents, but also the consultants assisting the scheme and any consultants assisting the agents, these arrangements just cannot work. So I'd be very interested in your thoughts or whether anything came through the surveys around how you break that or how you build that collaboration around the remuneration measures, where it's often the case that one agent's remuneration is linked to other agents' remuneration through either a fixed fee pool that is allocated out or a share of a liability release that is assessed at a scheme level and then broken out across the agents. But how do you have that collaboration, that discussion, where changing one agent's results has a flow-on effect to everybody else in the scheme? So if there's a winner, there's going to be a loser somewhere. How do you get that level of discussion to occur and changes to be made as a result of those discussions to build that trust in the arrangement where everyone's results are tied together like that?
Yeah, I think that's a good question, I think. From one perspective, I suppose it comes back to some of it comes back to the form of the key performance indicators you use. So from an absolute KPI perspective, you won't necessarily have that nexus change, but where you have relative performance measures, then that's definitely the case. I suppose go back to earlier what we said about the constructions of the KPIs and building the relationship and the trust. You know, part of it is making sure that, and again, it comes back to testing the KPI before. What sort of behavioural change are you going to do? And so building the trust, I mean, from our perspective, it's about aligning the objectives of the scheme and the agent in a constructive way. And so it's engaging them early in the process, seeing what sort of behaviours are going to be driven from KPIs under a different range of circumstances and so forth. So actually an important part of testing KPIs, if you've got performance-based fees, is to see, well, how will agents respond under different circumstances? Do they trust the key performance indicators and so forth?
Hi, I'm Lisa. It's probably more of a comment than a question just on your last point about how should innovation be promoted. I think until we start moving into an environment where our authorities or anomaly insurers are less risk averse, it's actually very difficult for agents to be purely innovative. A lot of the time the feedback we get from the anomaly insurers is these sort of things may get overturned in court, or it's not something that we will support you doing. And I think until we actually reach a position where we're encouraged to be innovative and can actually bring some proper innovation into the industry, I think we're a little way off being able to promote it.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point as well, because to what level do schemes want innovation to happen within their claim management process? Is that one of the reasons that they actually outsource? And yeah, I mean, that sort of feedback would be interesting from the schemes.
You've got to be quick, Peter. 30 seconds.
I just want to make one point. Remuneration by itself will actually not ensure good performance of agents. You need a holistic approach to the management of agents. And it needs to be really proactive. So you may have good remuneration, but you may not get the outcome you want because you haven't got the other key aspects dealt with.
Yeah, as I said, this is focusing on remuneration. I think at the outset we sort of said, hey, there's actually other ways you can actually manage that, and obviously relationship management is key to that as well. So, yeah, and that came through in the feedback.
All right, well, thank you. Would you join me in thanking Peter and Grace for their presentation today?